Good morning. This is Dallas Townsend with a CBS World News Roundup. On this 125th day of the hostage crisis in Tehran, Foreign Minister Guspadeh said the American captives probably will be transferred tomorrow from the U.S. Embassy to another location, in hopes, he added, that they'll be treated better. Guspadeh also said that as soon as they're moved, the U.N. Commission of Inquiry will be allowed to see all of them. Whether this should be taken as encouraging is impossible to say, as we hear from Bernard Kalb at the State Department.
Fingers crossed is about the best way to describe the official U.S. mood right now. A hope that whatever is happening in Iran will lead to the release of the hostages. Nobody wants to say anything aside from saying that the latest developments in Tehran are being noted. And this near silence is rooted in an anxiety that a wrong syllable out of Washington might derail the scenario that Washington would like to take place. That is, the hostages turned over to the Revolutionary Council as simply step number one, leading to quick freedom for the imprisoned Americans. A short while ago, a telephone call to the Iranian task force here at the State Department produced only one word when the official on duty was asked whether he had anything to say about what's going on in Tehran. Nothing was the reply. There have been so many instances of dashed hopes, frustrated expectations in connection with the hostages that there is no runaway feeling here that the crisis is on the verge of a breakthrough. But clearly, that is the hope. And that's why official fingers are crossed and official mouths virtually wordless. Bernard Kalb, CBS News, the State Department.
No change apparent today in the hostage crisis in Bogota, but Austrian Ambassador Edgar Seltzer, whom the leftist guerrillas released yesterday because his wife is seriously ill, is openly concerned. On his return to Vienna this morning, Seltzer said the remaining hostages face an extremely dangerous situation. If a peaceful solution is not worked out, Seltzer said he thinks the Bogota crisis will end in a catastrophic massacre. Gerald Ford plans to meet soon at his home in Palm Springs, California, with John Sears, the political expert recently fired by Ronald Reagan. And that's just the latest of many signs that the former president is thinking seriously of getting into the race for the Republican presidential nomination. There have been other signs this week during Mr. Ford's appearances in Florida, reported from St. Petersburg by David Dow.
By itself, it may not be the consensus Gerald Ford wants before declaring his candidacy, but the attention he kept getting during his 3 days in Florida didn't exactly hurt either. The suspense over will he or won't he become a candidate seemed to upstage next week's Florida primary, in which Mr. Ford is not even a listed candidate. But he sounds increasingly like he may soon enter the Republican race, stressing the electability and experience issues. For instance, a press conference in St. Petersburg.
A lot of people tell me that the American voter in 1980 is not going to put an inexperienced man into that important job to replace somebody who was inexperienced but who's at least been there and may have profited by his on-the-job training. Just look around.
Despite press reports to the contrary, Mr. Ford insists he has not formally decided to enter the race yet, but he's done nothing to discourage speculation that he will. David Dow, CBS News, St. Petersburg, Florida.
This is Ronald Reagan's last day of campaigning in South Carolina before that state's Republican primary tomorrow, and Bill Plant reports that he'll spend it touring rural areas by bus in an effort to offset the lead that John Connally is believed to have in those regions.
By the time he finishes campaigning today, Reagan will also have been in five of the state's six congressional districts. Important because delegates are awarded to the winner in each district. Reagan now has some money problems. He is close to the spending limit in South Carolina, and he has had to cancel some TV advertising and chartered airplane travel. But his campaign appears to be in no difficulty here. Reagan was asked again if he expected former President Ford to enter the race. And like Mr. Ford, Reagan seems to think the possibility more likely every day.
I lean toward the idea that he really has more than his toes in the water and that he'll probably be a candidate.
Reagan expects to win in South Carolina. The questions are by how much and who finishes second, Connally or Bush. But voting patterns are not predictable in this primary, the first of its kind, so surprises are always possible. Bill Plant, CBS News, with the Reagan campaign in South Carolina.
Connally is also campaigning hard today in South Carolina, a state that Eric Engberg says Connally thinks will show that he remains a serious contender, despite a string of defeats and a dwindling treasury.
Conway will not call this his make-or-break state, but many of his advisors see it as a last chance to keep his campaign afloat. His showing here Saturday, strong or weak, they believe, will heavily influence next Tuesday's voting in three other Deep South states, Florida, Georgia, and Alabama. Ronald Reagan is the acknowledged front-runner in these states. Neither he nor anyone else has devoted the time to South Carolina that Conley has, 18 days. That expenditure of time, coupled with a last-minute advertising campaign Conley financed with a personal loan when his once well-heeled war chest was depleted, has raised hopes in the Conley camp that he can win here. But the big factor has been the nonstop campaigning of Strom Thurmond, the 77-year-old conservative senator who has been telling fellow South Carolinians Conley is the only man tough enough to stand up to the Russians and the Democrats. Eric Engberg, CBS News, Greenville, South Carolina.
Not entered in South Carolina, Congressman John Anderson, the man who placed a strong second this week in both Massachusetts and Vermont. He's campaigning today in his home state, Illinois, hoping to place at least second in the March 18th primary there. The Labor Department this morning reported that producer prices rose 1.5% in February, nearly equaling the 1.6% in January, which was the highest monthly increase in more than 5 years. Hefty boosts in wholesale costs of gasoline and home heating oil were largely to blame. But the jobless rate last month declined a trifle to 6% from 6.2%. CBS News business correspondent Ray Brady reports that most Wall Streeters believe stock prices in the near future will be heading in just one direction, and that direction is down.
That's because investors see no sign that interest rates will be dropping, and high interest rates usually mean weak stock prices in the market. Not only that, two prominent business figures now are predicting that the bank's prime interest rate, which currently stands at a record-breaking 17.25%, now will be going even higher to 20%. Many Wall Streeters also feel that the administration has not been able to handle inflation and that the cost of living could go even higher in the months ahead, and they are selling stocks for that reason as well. In yesterday's market, the selling was so broad and so intense that it hit even the oil stocks, which had been big winners in the market. By the time the closing buzzer rang on the floor of the New York Stock Exchange, Texaco was down more than 2 points. Standard of Indiana, which sells Amoco gasoline, was down more than 6, and Mobil Oil was down more than 7 points. Ray Brady, CBS News, New York.
The Dow Jones Industrial Average has dropped 65 points in the past 3 weeks. Auto Workers President Douglas Fraser appears this morning before the House Ways and Means Trade Subcommittee with an urgent request. Fraser, worried about high unemployment among the union membership, wants Congress to consider legislation limiting the import of foreign cars, primarily from Japan. Bruce Dunning reports the reaction in Tokyo.
Japan's top two automakers are carefully watching congressional moves toward limiting exports of cars to the United States, but industry sources say they are hoping that Congress will not have time to legislate restrictions before adjourning for the election campaign. The automakers also refuse to be rushed into agreeing to build cars in the United States. With Japanese auto sales up by a third this year over last year, the United Auto Workers Union, congressmen from auto-building states, and the Carter administration are trying to pressure the top two producers, Toyota and Nissan, the builder of the Datsun, into starting production in the United States. The Japanese government and the Japanese Auto Workers Union both back the idea, but Toyota and Nissan insist they are not convinced that the heavy investments necessary would pay off. The Japanese firms insist the problem is primarily the failure of the United States automakers to produce the compact, fuel-efficient cars that American drivers want. When the new breed of American compacts come into production, say industry sources here, the demand for Japanese cars will probably decline. Bruce Dunning, CBS News, Tokyo.
The dollar rose about a yen today in Tokyo, and it's strong in Western Europe, while gold is down. It was pegged in London this morning at $602.25 an ounce, off about $24 from the previous fix.